From the Marine Corps Air Facility in Santa Ana, California, this is Marine Staff Sergeant Bob Vandywalker interviewing Sergeant Thomas McDonald. Sergeant McDonald, what organization are you with here at Santa Ana?
I'm with 165.
Now, you just returned from Vietnam. What month did you return?
June of 65.
And how long were you over there?
11 and a half months in the area itself with a two-week layover at Okinawa.
Sergeant McDonald, can you start from the beginning of when you left the States and what outfit you were with and what you did from the time you left, what organizations were involved?
I was with HMM 162 under Colonel Curtis. We departed El Toro in May of 65, ended up in Okinawa, picked up our airplanes, departed from Okinawa around the 28th of May, went aboard the Valley Forge and flew into Da Nang.
In other words, you flew off the carrier, your organization flew off the carrier into Da Nang?
This is right, the whole outfit.
Now, at the time you arrived in Da Nang, was there an airfield, what type of airfield operation was set up there?
We had, as I recall, we had the one main strip, which, as I recall, was 4,000 foot in length. We set up in the old French hangar over by the air terminal next to the Arvin Air Force.
Well, what is this Arvin Air Force?
That would be your Republic of Vietnam Air Force. They were training in HUS as the same type aircraft that we had.
Now, you say you were in Vietnam 11 months. Was there a tremendous change as far as build up at this particular Da Nang Air Force base in 11 months?
Unbelievable. The times that we were, the first time we were in there, we were a taxi outfit more than anything else, plus resupply of chow and what have you. And from that time on, it rapidly got more intense. The Air Force moved more people in, the Army moved more people in, and the by the time it was all over with, at one time we had three Marine helicopter squadrons themselves operating out of there.
What type of construction? Did they build barracks or build runways, improve the runways, anything like this?
The runways were under improvement. The roads were still their same muddy selves. It don't seem like they ever improved at all. The first time we were in, we lived up in the old French compound. We had the French barracks up there. The second time in, we went in and built up a tent city down at the end of the runway at Da Nang, and then we went and put a detachment up at Wei Fu Bai. We built up a tent city at Wei Fu Bai also.
Sergeant McDonald, what was the mission, particular mission of your squadron over there?
Resupply and moving troops from spot to spot.
Can you tell me about some of these experiences that was involved in the squadron?
Well, they seem to be, it seems like a sea story every time somebody comes up with them, but they're really not. Some of the landing zones over there you couldn't believe. It seems a couple of times that I've actually had to lay on my belly and direct the pilots into a landing zone. It was that tight. I can remember one place up by the border at Quezon, up on top of Tiger Tooth, which I believe was 6,800 feet, that you had to fly in and out of the clouds. You'd have to go up in
orbit.
And when you seen a hole in the clouds, you'd go down and get into the strip. Or not, actually, it was just a zone. And then wait for the clouds to roll by again so you could see an opening to get out.
We're talking about the jungle, is that right?
This was on top of a mountaintop.
And you were landing Vietnam troops in there?
At this point, I'd rather not say.
Well, did you work at all, did your helicopter squadron work at all with the Marine infantry troops? Let's put it this way.
The second time we was in there, I had hauled several Vietnamese nationals who were dead. Naturally, you see a dead person and you have a little remorse. Well, it didn't really strike me until such times as we started hauling Marine dead. And we At one time, I hauled a dead Marine that was less than 6 minutes away from the airstrip at Da Nang. In fact, there was fresh blood in the cabin when I got him back to the airstrip, which we used to water all the canteens to wash the blood out.
In other words, the Marines, you had went up to where the Marines had encountered the Viet Cong. By what, when was this? Any particular battle that you can remember this happened in?
I was there when they started the offensive Da Nang itself. In fact, our squadron made the landing at Chu Lai and put troops in at Wei Fu Bai. We offloaded an ammo ship, I believe it was the Sacramento, off of Wei Fu Bai. 3 days of doing nothing but flying and hauling ammunition at a ton of time. Your question about in combat with the American troops, I went out on the first reactionary strike. We had got to the mountain to pick these people up, I believe it was something like 6 minutes, and tuck them out into the field. We was drawing fire when we went in with them, and they tried to clear the area and push the VC back across the river and into the fields. But they had gotten into the villages where they were putting out sniper fire. There was no big force of people as you would think as combat troopers.
How did you feel the morale carrying these Marine infantry? How was the morale of the Marine infantry at that particular time?
At times, I have actually had to take and put my arm across the door to keep our younger type Marines from jumping out of the helicopter before the wheels settled. They were at the time when we first started hauling, they were eager to go. They wanted to get out.
How many missions did you have over in Vietnam?
103.
Did you have any unusual experience in any of these missions that you can remember?
The only thing that I have in the back of my mind right now is the day we went into this one small jungle village, and I think Sergeant Hedges, who was in the same outfit and myself, were in there in a two-plane flight, and some of the villagers come out wailing. We went down to find out what it was all about, and there was a small boy, possibly 3 or 4 years old. At night, the VC had come through and threw in a hand grenade into the hut and killed the mother and father, and the youngster had picked up shrapnel. And all we had in the airplane was our first aid kits, and we tried to take care of his wounds and make him as comfortable as we could.
Did you get him back to the hospital and everything?
Oh, yes. We flew him out with us when we went out.
On some of these missions, did you ever go out on a search and rescue type of mission?
Yes, I was one of the crew chiefs that were selected for SAR North. This would entail going up to Quang Tri, watching our airplanes go over, and waiting there until they come back from up north, until we was cleared to go back to our base at Da Nang, which is about 60 miles away.
As a crew chief on a helicopter, what did your average day consist of from the time you got up until you went to bed at night?
Oh, that's a rough one. We'd get up if our airplane would be in commission, we'd go down in pre-flight. This would be, we would have it pre-flighted by dawn's light. We'd be ready to go. We'd wait for our frag orders to come in. This would come in the night before, so we knew what we were going to do the next morning. We'd load up cargo, either troops or livestock or whatever the case may be, and fly out to these different outposts and resupply. This would go on all day. You'd come in, refuel, and go back out. Then at night when you come in, if your airplane needed maintenance or if you needed a check, you would have the airplane completely finished before you secured. We were able to keep real good availability this way.
Now, you had some perimeter of defense at night. Who took care of this and how was it done?
Well, we had our own guard set up, our own interior guard set up within the squadron level. Everybody was assigned to a platoon. We had our troopers walking guard down around the airplanes. When they hit the alarm, we'd all fall out in platoon formation, so to speak. We'd have our assigned offensive positions, which we would go to.
This didn't matter. In other words, if you worked all day and you had something come up at night, everybody went out and tried to do their job. Is this right?
That's the only thing you could do.
And these young people that were standing guard duty at night were actually working on these helicopters during the daytime.
They would stand there four to 8 hours guard, whatever the case may be, and they'd want to be down there the next morning to fly as gunner or to help in any way they could taking care of the aircraft.
What type of chow facilities and living conditions did you have there, Danae?
As I said before, when we went in the first time, we were living up in the French compound, and we were the only squadron in. The chow was outstanding. There was no way it could be improved on. The second time we went in, things got a little bit rougher, and we was eating sea rations. We were living in tents. We couldn't get the lumber to hardback with, so we had cots set up, which was on the ground within tents, eaten out of a field kitchen. All in all, the tools that we had to work with, or the support people had to work with, they'd done a magnificent job.
Sergeant McDonald, on any of your missions, did you have the chance to see or pick up any Viet Cong prisoners, or see the Viet Cong? Can you sort of describe them to me?
Well, this was rather commonplace. One that sticks out in my mind more than anything else right now was one that we picked up at Khe Sanh, which was a big mountain area up north near the border. It seemed like this person had come disenchanted with everything that everybody was telling them about the north. And from what the people told us that brought him up to the airplane, that he had surrendered. He was a rather tall person in shorts, short sleeve. They didn't have him tied up as they do with the usual people, and everybody was around patting him on the back, smiling, and offering him food. And we put him in the airplane and brought him back down to Da Nang, which was about 80 to 90 miles. All the way back down, he was looking out the door, looking like he was really relieved to be back. He showed no real fear of the Americans, although we were armed. There was no apprehension on his part at all. On the other hand, I've gone into a command post that had just been hit. Well, the command post had not been hit. The truck convoy had been hit, and they'd been bringing the bodies back to the command post. And I went back to the command post to get some information to find out where they wanted the bodies taken. And they had two women VCs in there. And they on the other hand, showed hatred all throughout their actions, their speech, and the whole works.
In a description of these Viet Cong, were they older people or younger people in most cases?
Well, this is a pretty hard question to answer. When we first got in there, we were told that all of these people were to be treated until they proved otherwise as to put it quite bluntly, as an enemy. We would never turn our backs on any of them. In fact, I have flown with these people in the airplanes and come back in off in hops, and I have found hand grenades under the seat. Of course, they had just... I like to think that they had just fallen off in the people's battle gear. I don't think that I had ever hauled anybody that was trying to blow the airplane up. But to tell whether they were young or old would be hard to say.
Well, getting on the other side of the fence to the Vietnamese, in your time in Vietnam, did you see where your own opinion, whether these people that sort of started liking us or feeling that we were trying to do something for them?
I have never gone into a landing zone to where there have been Vietnamese people in mass that haven't come up and smiled or tried to shake my hand or come up and just touch me. That's all they wanted to do, was just touch me. And I have had children up at Quang Tri. I have flown into Quang Tri and actually had to set the airplane down, and I'd jump out and get back and chase the children away so we could set the airplane down. And that's all they wanted to do, is just come up and pat you or touch you. And if you tuck and put your arms around one in a friendly gesture around his shoulders, you couldn't get rid of him.
Did you ever have opportunity to see how our civic action program was working? Were we, this particular time, giving food to the Vietnamese or clothing or anything like this?
Not, I don't believe, on an organized basis. No, I don't believe.
We were assisting them in some other ways, though, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, yes. I had nothing to do with it. Of course, the squadron had us all pretty busy, but the CBs were out drilling holes for well water, and they were putting up schools up in the upper regions of the country.
Well, do you feel, after spending your time in Vietnam, that the human kindness war is as important as the Bulletin War over there?
In my own opinion, I think if we don't start putting out medical gear to take care of these people, we're in a world of trouble. We have to fight the hardcore VCs with bullets, bombs, and bayonets, as the old saying goes. But the young people that are impressed, we can do much more with a good Navy corpsman with a stash on his side full of medical gear.
Sergeant McDonald, what other helicopter squadrons were operating with you in Da Nang at the particular time you were there?
We had 365, who we followed over there. 163 and 161 was operating off the ship.
And who was your commanding officer, your squadron?
Lieutenant Colonel Curtis.
Sergeant McDonald, a final question. How did you feel about your own personal role in the Vietnam War?
That's a pretty hard question to answer. The Marine Corps sent me over there to do a job, but as a Marine, I do have the prerogative of thinking for myself. These people need help. Without getting too corny about it, I'm just thankful that I was able to help some of them, and I hope some of the people that we hauled out after they had been shot, we hauled back to get medical treatment, pulled through. If they didn't have the helicopter there, they would have never made it otherwise.
Keep on the same question. Do you feel that our role is necessary in Vietnam?
This is another hard question. My own personal feeling of this, if we don't stop these people there, we're going to have to stop them someplace else. I would just as soon see them stop there than to have to worry about them in the cities of America or trying to push them out of the mountains here, which may not happen in our lifetime, but if this aggression is not backed up against the wall and showed that we're not going to take this foolishness, it will surely happen.
Thank you very much, Sergeant McDonald.
You're welcome.